The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Once again, to New Haven Radio, this is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. Whoops. Along with me in the studio, I have Hassan Godwin sitting across from me, who is not saying anything now. This is radio, not television, is your famous words.
Hello, Mark.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
Okay.
I just wanted to see what you'd do if I didn't say anything.
Well, now you know.
If you had just moved on, it would have been fine. But now it's ruined.
Okay.
And I say hello to Charlie.
Charlie Saladino sitting next to us.
Hey, guys. How are you?
So we're already in the new 2011
yay,
year.
Yay,
you know?
2011.
Yay.
John Cusack is right. We got 24 months left to go.
Yes. Yes. And he did. He also said that 2010 overstayed its welcome. I agree with that.
Really?
Yes.
All right.
2010, not a great year.
Oh.
Bad year.
Well, this is good so far.
This is great so far. The last
Seven
few days have been magnificent.
5 days in, we're
magnificent.
Awesome. So let me mention that if anybody.
Going to snow again this weekend though.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
That's not going to be good.
That's one of my arch enemies.
Yeah, snow is your arch enemy.
If Shia LaBeouf was made out of snow, he'd be like the ultimate supervillain. That's how much I hate snow.
Well, let his career keep going the way it's going. It'll be one of those Jack Frost movies. That'll be perfect for you.
killing people with the carrot nose?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be hating pretty much Friday is what you're going to be hating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so anyway, having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on a live audio streaming, also on a GBB website. You can actually see us on the web studio cam in 10-second intervals. Although we're trying to wave, you actually probably can't see us.
I'm not waving.
Well, actually, you are waving, but they can't tell you're waving.
Yes, but that's why I'm telling them I'm not waving.
Oh.
So they don't think that they missed the wave in the middle of it.
They're going to be staring intentively, waiting for Hassan to wave.
It's like,
he's not waving.
It shall not happen.
I don't need to watch this anymore. I'll put on something else.
Exactly. Because I don't listen to the show. I just watch the
the pictures.
I just watch the feed of people, you know.
Yeah, Max Headroom.
And the phone number here is area code 61-888-8811. Well, actually, I have very little news this week. I only have
no research.
No, it was just a slow week. It was snow,
and
then it was a slow week. No, the only thing I have is the tally results are in. The highest grossing movie of 2010 was Toy Story 3, because Avatar doesn't count because it came out in 2009.
Right, of
course. A lot of people are saying, oh, it's Avatar. No, it's not. It's Toy Story
3. Avatar is 2009. Everybody knows that.
Made $300 million.
I had my second copy of Avatar before
2010.
Yeah, before December. So clearly it was a 2009 movie.
Yes, yeah, so there you go. Congratulations to Disney. And
yay, Disney.
Yay.
And Pixar. I just saw a big documentary on Pixar on one of those channels.
That narrows it down.
One of those darn channels. I'll never know what channel it was. I was surfing, and it was like, oh, Pixar, I'll stop, I'll watch this. I actually saw George Lucas, and, you know.
Oh.
Had a nerd moment. I was like, oh, George! And then he was talking about Pixar. I was like, aww. And then he was going on and on about Pixar. And then Steve Jobs and a whole bunch of other guys who were involved in the Pixar phenomenon were talking. And how they have, they pretty much have a string of successful movies. Not one of their movies is a flop out of 8 or 9 movies that they've done since the beginning of the company.
Yeah.
So it's an unprecedented accomplishment for Hollywood.
And then came 2011, and they messed up somewhere.
Really?
I don't know.
2011 hasn't happened yet. What are you just? Are you predicting the future?
I'm making a prediction. Something's gonna be bad.
I'm all about the positivity
gonna be a surprise
this year.
Of the year.
See, that's you. You can.
You're positive?
I'm staying with the positivity.
Really?
Yeah. Everything's going to be fine. Well, next week, yeah, maybe. But so far, I'm not ruining it so far. Right. So everything's good.
So, and the second bit of news, speaking of
good news.
Positive, no,
all
negative,
good news.
No, well, yes, positive news. The actor who fell in the Spider-Man movie, the Broadway show, the actor who fell 30 feet,
right.
He's out of the hospital, he's all better, yay, he's been able to walk around.
Is he going back to the show?
He's thinking about going, says he can't wait to get back to work, but he still has to, you know, fully recover, but he's out of the hospital, walking around, walking and talking.
See? More positive news.
That's good news, but
yes.
On the sad side...
what are you doing?
Actress Natalie Mendoza, who was the female villain in the play, quit the show for unknown reasons, but I think we all have...
She doesn't want to fall to her death.
She wants to live.
Fear of falling to her death.
I want to live.
Show.
I'm leaving the show. I don't want actors falling on me or I'm falling. No.
It's like that joke from Jaws. Of Richard Dreyfuss comes in to talk to Roy Scheider, and his wife is there, and his wife's saying, he's got a real problem with water. You know, what do they call that? She looks at him, and Roy Scheider goes, drowning. So,
yeah.
Why'd you quit the show? Didn't want to die.
That's
pretty much.
Yeah.
That's
you know, here it is. Every time the show went on into previews, something happened. Okay, I quit. That's
something
it.
Bad.
Seriously, one of the smartest moves anyone could ever do. Kudos to that actress.
But, yeah, before something terrible happens to her.
It could have been the home run thing that, you know, she wanted to be.
It could be. You know, the thing is...
Herman was saying... I'm sorry, but Herman was saying he compared it to Circus of Horrors.
It's true. Look... It could be the biggest thing in the world, right? But you gotta weigh the possibilities of personal injury next to your greed, you know, your nonstop greed. There's nothing that guarantees that you'll make fame and fortune from this show. However, there's mounting evidence that you could get maimed or have an unfortunate moment from the show. So. You know, you got to weigh your options. She's a movie star. She's done two really popular movies as a potential main character. She's
right.
A very good looking woman, so she should have.
She wants to keep on doing.
Yeah, she should have the opportunity to make a few more movies.
Yeah,
and she'll probably get a lot of fame off of leaving. Because that's the way things are now. Remember in the old days, people used to leave something and they just sank into obscurity.
Yeah,
you know, like the other Beatle guy. what's his name?
Pete Best,
right? He did the best thing for him was to leave the Beatles. Back then, you used to sink back into obscurity. It's like, oh, whatever happened to that guy? You know, the original drummer for the... Who's the drummer for the... Well, you couldn't tell me who the drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers is now, right?
No.
But I'm saying, who's
Will
the drummer
Farrell.
That came before him? No.
Or Parnell, the third Cartwright brother in Bonanza. He left the middle of the series, basically wasn't heard of again for 20 years.
Robbins.
Exactly.
Pinnell Robbins.
Well,
all
he
of a sudden,
one.
He went to another town.
He went to another town.
Yeah, I don't know. Pinnell Roberts was there, and then he wasn't.
He went to the High Chaparrales after.
Yeah, exactly.
Trapagiana. Exactly. But nowadays, because of blogging and all that stuff, you're famous for anything you do, just because you did something. So I left that show.
And
I left the show that just became a hit super show, and then she'll get like a blog on that, like she left the show just before the show exploded, and everybody on that show became a billionaire. So someone else will give her... $1 million just to tell the story of leaving that show, like the losers from Survivor.
Yeah.
How is it that they're all rich? You're supposed to lose. You're not supposed to go on and be famous and be on magazine covers and stuff like
that's
that.
That's very true.
That's no one loses these days.
So
fame.
Just in case somebody writes in, Pete Best did not leave the Beatles.
The Beatles left Pete Best.
Yeah. George Martin says, I don't like your drummer. They wanted to be famous. He wasn't showing up for gigs, and that was it.
No,
they gave him the big, take it easy.
We're going to have the show over in New York and actually in California, and so the Beatles went
all right, Brian Jones.
No.
See? Well, you know Brian Jones because he died. That's the... That's why you know him. But
I'm staring at you like
I don't know what I'm saying? But if he had left the Rolling Stones now, you would know.
Yeah.
You would know who he was. He'd be everywhere. It'd be ex-Rolling Stone Brian Jones does a blog about this, or ex-Rolling Stone Brian Jones does that other show where they...
Celebrity Rehab, America's Got Talent,
or whatever. That yeah, Celebrity Rehab, or he'd be on To Catch a Predator, or something like that.
Yeah, he'd be famous. Do you think? Because I don't hear anything about Bill Wyman, and he was in there since get-go.
I'm saying if it happened today.
Sorry.
If it happened not back then.
So maybe it's a good thing that they decided not to keep.
Steven Adler was on Celebrity Rehab. Steven Adler's famous. For getting kicked out of Guns N' Roses for drinking.
So that's
the number one late 80s. No, the number one late 80s, early 90s drinking and drugging band. And they kicked him out for excessive drug use. Do you understand?
Wow.
That's why he's famous.
Wow, this is a bit much for you guys.
He did so much that Axl Rose couldn't deal with him anymore. And kicked him off the stage. And then he was on Celebrity Rehab, and it was like, oh. And they're calling him by his first name, oh, Steven. Oh, Steven's such a character. Steven's funny. Oh, Steven, you know, that humorous stuff. And suddenly he's an instant household name. That's all we need these days, to see some jerk on television.
So when's your show?
And I don't have a show because I don't want to be on television because apparently it is a wasteland for losers.
Oh, okay.
Famous for being famous.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like Paris Hilton.
Exactly. Well, yeah. And
Snooki? Did I say that? Snooki, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Ooh, nope. Go wash your mouth up.
Yeah. Oh,
why should
God.
Any of us know who she is? Why should any of us care?
Why should any of us care, yeah.
She's it's absurd. The absurdity of your character and your willingness to display the absurdity of your character and shame yourself in front of billions of people.
And the willingness
is what
of America
gets
to
you
watch
millions
that.
Of dollars. These, well, yeah.
Well,
America's going to watch. America would watch a nun fry a shoe. You know, America's not.
We did talk about the Aquarium Channel.
Right? Remember that. The Aquarium Channel or the NASA Channel? Remember I told you about that? And in another 10 minutes, New Zealand will be coming up on your right hand side of your screen.
So that's, you know, I guess.
And then it's just us. Which is like this white noise, and then
a panoramic
view of the Earth rolling around, and you're sitting there like, I can't believe I haven't changed the channel yet.
Yet, here I am.
Yet, I don't want to.
This is fascinating. This is strangely alluring.
I have a beer, and I'm watching this. I don't know why.
I have no idea what I'm doing.
It sounds like video wallpaper.
It is. And in fact, Tom, if your wallpaper didn't move, you'd never leave your room. You don't lie. No one lie. If your wallpaper moved, you would be in your room all day. You'd be the entire workforce of America would stop cold because they were too busy watching their wallpaper.
That's where drugs come into play,
from
right
side
there.
To side. That right. But see, the people who take drugs, that's what they see on a regular basis.
All, yeah.
But we weed them out. Oh. The rest of us don't. Now, if you made accessible, you know, drug after effects, like moving wallpaper, you would get the after effects and the bedazzling, you know, mentality or whatever without the need for spending all the money on your drugs.
It's like master of disguise at the end when he's just sitting there and he looks in and he finally goes, what are you people still doing here? The movie's over. You know, it's like, and you're still watching him.
Yeah, like he's going to do something. Any minute, something's going to happen. So, yeah, that's, so I don't think she'll have to worry, getting all the way back to the point you were making. I don't think she'll have to worry about her fame.
She's going to be all right.
That's what I do. That's why, in fact,
you're saying that show's wreckage. You might have saved her life.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the old joke? I'm not saying that the place is unlucky, but when I walked in there, my... four-leaf clover wilted and my rabbit's foot ran away.
Yeah.
If she didn't fall from something, someone would have fell on her.
That's really
all there is to it. Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. So that's Spider-Man. I'm not talking ill about the show because it's all about being positive. This whole year is a positive thing.
We are just stating facts.
Exactly.
So nicely done. Staying alive, Nelly Mendoza.
Yes. Out you go. Yeah. Go make The Descent
that's
3.
That's what the play should have been called. Staying alive.
Staying alive.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, staying alive.
Yeah.
Spider-Man, no, you can't fly.
Spider-Man, tie the ropes off.
You know, they could have just put Spider-Man Menace or what's the catch line that the Daily Bugle always puts out?
Oh, Menace or Miracle.
Threat or Menace.
The Threat or Menace.
That's what they should call the play. Yeah. Threat or Menace.
Threat or Menace.
Yeah. What's it called? Turn
off the dark.
Turn off the dark.
I think that's
yeah.
Turn off
yeah,
the dark.
Turn off the dark.
Turn on the dark?
Yeah.
The dark.
Should be hold on.
Yeah. Should be turn on the lights and see what's in front of you.
It should be Spider-Man with both hands. That's what it should be called.
Turn off the dark, let in OSHA.
So now we move on to some sad news.
No.
I just found this out.
No, positive.
I knew it the other day.
Anne Francis, famous for being the female lead in Forbidden Planet, died of cancer this past weekend. She was 19. She was 19. She was 80 years old. I was going to say 1980. She was 80 years old.
80 years old.
So, yeah. So, our condolences.
She died New Year. One day into... Because it was
a couple of days
Saturday or Sunday.
Year.
Happy New Year!
Yeah, she also played one of the first kicktail female heroines on TV, Honey West, the Private Eye.
Yeah. Wow. And if you, one of my favorite actresses, if you go onto Honey West on YouTube, you'll see a couple of episodes there, which are really innovative because they use a lot of, you know, they use a lot of equipment that is really like you. You know, you say, wow, they had it back then. It was 65, 66. And also, while you're on that YouTube website, there's a thing called Anne Francis Forbidden Planet. It's a 20-minute interview with her. I think people should listen to that to see what kind of person she was. She was really, really quite intelligent, and she was quite a nice, nice person. And she made an interesting point that I think the interviewer asked her about, aren't you afraid of walking the streets of New York or something like that? And she came out with a brilliant answer. She says, no, if you have fear in your mind, like in Forbidden Planet, if you have the id going for you, and, you know, like, if that's your fear, then you'll be afraid.
Right.
She says, fear is what you make it. And an amazing lady, and not only was she, you know, Honey West was, which was very innovative for that time. She was in a lot of roles. She played opposite a lot of stars on the movie screen, and quite a looker, you know, until you know the very end. And she'll be missed, definitely. So there you go.
For what it's worth, I happen to know that the only reason that the Honey West show went off the air was because the business people behind it got in a fight with the network, and the network said, well, guess what? There's this new show coming out from Britain that also features a kick-ass lady called The Avengers.
The Avengers, yeah.
So guess what? We don't think there's room in town for both of you. Wow. Bye-bye.
Yeah. And Honey West only went from 65 to 66, and it was really good. I mean,
oh, yeah.
check it out on YouTube, yeah. Seriously.
It was based on a series of books, also called Honey West, that had a number of substantial differences. For one thing, it was definitely pre-feminist, though, in that even that she always figured it out in the end and always won in the end. There was at least one scene where somehow or other she always lost all her clothes, though somehow never her virtue.
Hey, that's not
bad. That's not a bad series.
But the thing about the series was they did a lot differently in the series, that she, like the Honor Blackman character in Avengers, really didn't know judo and was flipping guys over her shoulder.
Yeah.
And she was definitely in charge of her organization, and she had things like a pet ocelot, and she didn't have a partner, but she had a man who worked with her who lived in a van in the backyard, and it was just a very interesting series. A lot of young girls and ladies at the time took it as an inspiration.
Yeah, and of course, one of my memorable Anne Francis roles was the mannequin on Twilight Zone. Yeah. Yeah, that was one hell of an episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I know that one.
Yeah.
I could chime in because I know that one.
Chime in.
I knew that one. I know that episode.
Yeah.
What's it about?
It's about a woman who basically ends up in a department store. And yeah, and they and they, she feels like she's being haunted by these mannequins, but it turns out that she was a mannequin and she never came back, and then they're angry at her.
Yeah, so often, every periodically, the mannequins come to life and dwell in the world of the living, but then they have to come back.
Right, and she forgot. And she never came back.
I remember that now. Okay, I just need a little refresher.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
What one of her industry nicknames was the most famous beauty mark in the business.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because of the little mole at the corner of her mouth.
Yeah. I would take that.
Yeah. That's a good nickname.
I just thought she had the greatest pair of legs in the business. She was amazing.
She was beautiful, and I never heard a single bad word about her.
Yeah.
So I guess we're ready for our break. We'll be right back with Came from the Radio.
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Michael Ranley was ill the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a celluloid jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. This is how the message ran. Science fiction. Over a barrel when Tarantula took to the hills. And I really got hot when I saw Jeanette Scott fight a triffid that spits poison and kills. Dana Andrews, it proves, gave him the rules and passing the muse lots of skills. But when worlds George Powell to his bride, I'm gonna give you some terrible thrills. Like a we'll be right back.
back row. To the late night double feature picture show.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And we are back with King of Fun Radio. This is your host, Tora speaking, along with Hassan Godwin and Charlie Saladino.
Don't use my name.
The man formerly known as Hassan Godwin.
No! Formerly known as that guy whose name we won't mention.
You're gonna change your name to a symbol? I'm going to have to hold up the sign every time?
No. I'm just going to be that guy. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be question mark. question mark.
There you go. What you getting?
That man.
Exactly.
What is my name going to be?
Yeah. If I'm Mark, he's question mark. Who are you going to be?
I have no idea.
He's going to be Charlie Saladino.
Charlie Saladino.
The book signer.
Charlie Saladino, you weirdos, you.
He's going to be the bookkeeper.
Yes. I'll be the keeper of the gate.
I keep your books whenever you bring them to me.
Yes.
Thanks for that. Thank you.
I am the signer.
Wouldn't that be hilarious? You go to a signing and then you just take it. Thanks a lot. And you're like, hey, what?
Hold on. I got a long line. Keep moving.
You've been to my signings.
So
going to one tonight. Yay.
This week, speaking of signings and books, something that occurred to me a while ago, and I've been trying to piece this together to our topic of the week for a while, and I think I finally come to some sort of amalgam.
I'm glad you shared it with us in advance.
Idea, yes. You know how we've been, for the past year, we've been talking about remakes and rewrites, and for years beforehand, music was always, covered albums and songs were always redone. But very rarely do they do a remake of a book. And I've always wondered, what are your thoughts on that? Like, they remake stories on comic books, they remake movies, they remake TV shows, they remake music, they remake plays, but never somebody just goes out and just writes a new version of an old book. I mean,
it's called infringement, right?
Why is it that the book is sacred? Just like on the lines that...
Because it's technically an intellectual property. So if someone wrote a book, they're the owners of the book. If they die, their estate, whoever's living, whoever's the heir, owns a book. So it's sacrosanct. So you can get the right to film an intellectual property or to capitalize on an intellectual property by expanding on it, perhaps making a version of it for a movie or a TV show or a comic book, or expanding on it doing something with the characters based on whatever that is. But you can't like redefine the basis of what that intellectual property is.
It's like a song. You can't take a song and remake it.
Yeah, you can cover it, but you can't
remake it.
Yeah, you can't change the words.
Just ask the Beach Boys and Chuck Berry.
Oh yeah, yeah. Way to go, Beach Boys.
So you're saying it's more of a legal thing than anything.
It also tends to stem from our societal attitude that books are sacrosanct. That's the last, like the play is the thing. So books and plays and works that's the beginning of the creativity. That's the beginning. It all branches out from the first spark of the idea.
There has been, like Hassan said, there has been movies of books that had nothing to do with the book except for one thing. But example, Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, as we said. The only thing that's in the book is the lighthouse scene. That was it. And then it was just, the guy was partying.
Harryhausen, right?
Yeah, it was like, yeah. This is what the story is about. I read the book, and this is my interpretation of it. We'll keep the lighthouse. That's it.
Yeah, well, there used to be a lot of hubris among Hollywood writers that they were somehow better than mere book ones. And they used to brag that the first thing they did when they got a book was throw it in the trash, just keep the location and the names of the characters. The weird thing of it is though, going back to what you were saying, Hassan, about books being the bedrock, with Shakespeare, most, just about all his plays were either based on English history or on old Greco-Roman, Latin myths,
right.
or classical stories.
Yeah, excuse me. I'm not saying that he intellectually created any of those stories. I'm just saying that his version. There's Shakespeare and then there's history.
Right.
So his version of history, where it becomes a little more colorful or whatever, tends to be the basis for any theatrical versions of what we would do with history. Say like. Anthony and Cleopatra. Or Julius Caesar, which is where we get Anthony and Cleopatra and a bunch of other stories, or Macbeth. You know, obviously, all of these things are historical.
Or the King Henry ones.
Yes,
they actually followed, since they were closer to his time, they actually followed history reasonably closely.
Right, but the theatrical flair.
Yeah. Well, you know, he once said that what is a story but a hook to hang a play on.
Yeah.
I wish I said that. That's awesome.
you can say it now.
I can't say it.
Well, he wasn't the master of words for nothing, lad.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, remind me after the show, I have one heck of a Shakespeare story to tell.
Okay.
Yes, it's a tease for the audience. Listeners aren't allowed to hear this story.
You can't.
I'll tell it if you don't mind diverting the moment.
How long is the story?
Oh, heck, I'll just tell it. the leading actor in his company, Burbage. And in those days, just like these days, they developed groupies. It was Richard Burbage. And Shakespeare heard Burbage making arrangements to meet a very lovely young female groupie in a local tavern for a little after play play, shall we say?
Mm-hmm.
And since it was an exceedingly lovely looking young lady, what Shakespeare did was he arranged for Burbage to be held up, met the lady at the tavern. Said, hey, look, Burbage may be great and yada yada, but in the end, he's just an actor. I not only act, I wrote the thing. What it all boiled down to was a half hour later, Richard Burbage comes walking down the street, stops at the bottom of the tavern, and says, Richard the Great is here. And from the window, you heard, William the Conqueror beat you to it.
Could have been.
Oh, that was worth it.
Yeah.
That was worth it.
That was pretty much like my story when I was in a band, and I met this lovely young girl, and I says, yeah, let's go out after this. Just let me pack up my drums. And the bass player went out with her because the drums take a lot longer to back up than the bass.
I just need my sticks.
Yeah. In retrospect, leave the drums.
Yeah.
Get new drums.
Yeah. That just Tom just dug up some bad memories for me.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
We'll let you sign a book after the show. You'll feel better.
Okay. Thank God. I'm good now. Thank you, guys. That's why I got you guys here.
Along the same lines, as we're talking about, you know, if the writer is the rock. The solid point. If you think about other forms of medium, a lot of times people complain that if you have a ghostwriter or someone to help you with a book, it's such a bad thing. Yet if you do a movie or if you do a play or if you do anything else, if you have a whole bunch of writers, a TV show, a series, you have a whole bunch of writers working on the series, yet they don't get the same, frowned upon when it's just one writer writing a book. Why do you guys think about that?
Well, what do you...
You make X-Files, you know. It's not all Chris Carter. It's like Chris Carter and like eight other guys working in it.
Well, he was a creator. He was a brainchild, though.
Yeah, and it gives him a very detailed writer's Bible. Commercialism versus art, I suppose.
No, but you know, you think, you know, you have a table and you have, you know, the reeds and all the actors try to put in their two bits to it, and it's like, oh, it's a great collaboration, it's a great thing. But when a person writes a novel, a book, it just has to be them. If they get any kind of outside help, like a ghostwriter or something, like, oh, he has a ghostwriter. Why is that such a bad thing to have? Why is it so bad that the writer who writes the book has to be the one guy when all other forms of media, you can have a collaboration and it's fine?
You can collaborate with a book. You can have other people help you with a book.
Yeah, but it's always, you know, look, Tom Fancy and Bob and like, you know.
And George.
Yeah.
Well, that guy's not as famous. That's why his name is not as big as Tom Clancy.
Well, look at this. You have an intelligent person who could write a book, and then you have a person who is dumber than a sewer cap who wants to write a book and has to go to this person to have this book written, right? I'm not mentioning names, Snooki, but this is what is...
Apparently, even though we live in an illiterate age, you know, books are still, for the time being, sacrosanct, you know? I mean, they're finding different ways to distribute the books with these e-readers, the Kindles and stuff like that, but they still are seen as what Tom said, like the bedrock of the, you know, whatever theatrical creation that they're gonna, you know, that's gonna come there. It's the seed of whatever entertainment we're gonna utilize or whatever we're gonna utilize for entertainment in proper English. So there's a select few people that can conceivably hatch ideas from start to finish and then execute them all by themselves. But writing books is very difficult. I mean, writing a 400 page book.
Writing a good book.
Writing a book in general is difficult because the bottom line is you have to start it. And you have to do the middle, and then you have to do the end. You have to finish it. A lot of people will not finish stories, and a lot of people just cannot sit in front of a computer or a typewriter and type 400 pages worth of stuff, no matter how long it takes. It's just people – it's not – people don't have the attention span for it. People don't – you know, a lot of things will mess with you. You can write a 20-page report and hand it in, and that's not going to – that'll cost you a couple of hours, not going to cost you a lot of ego, but there's a lot of soul-searching and whatever involved in writing novels and in composing, you know, long works. And a lot of times people don't have the ego to push them through it. So whoever can finish a book in the first place, be it good or bad, is already leaps and bounds ahead of the average person. That's A. And then after that, if they've written a good book – I mean, everything we have, everything comes from books. You know, everything we've ever seen, most of the TV shows, the old TV shows that we had or whatever, comes from some form of literature, if not an actual book, then a comic book or a short story. So the people who write our literature are the only ones, you know, are basically the elders of the entertainment industry. You know, they're the brain trust.
A book is supposed to be some form of a reflection of the soul of the person who wrote it.
That's why a lot of people don't make it through.
I love books that the media just, it's such a great idea that the media beats the dead horse with it. And
well,
you got so many versions of one book, for example, Cinderella. Every love story is the Cinderella story. And I'm sure there's a lot of Shakespeare stories that are redone time and time again.
Yeah,
Romeo absolutely. And Juliet, your father doesn't like me. Yeah. My father doesn't like you.
Right.
And then this is stuff that happens
in real life, too,
because
you run into that stuff.
I like when I see a good series and it says, from an idea from...
Yeah, based
yeah,
on the...
Basic, based
loosely,
on,
loosely based on yeah, the...
Very loosely,
like,
yes.
Or you know me with comedies. Based on the comedy of... Yeah.
The comic works.
Based on nothing to do with a book, comic.
Yeah.
I don't... The answer to your question is you can't remake a book, the end. You can have different variations of that book, of the idea.
Well, yeah.
But
well, what would be the point?
Because
the book is supposed to be the definitive version of whatever story is told. So you see a movie that you really like. The first thing you're going to do if you really like that movie is, I'm going to read the book. The reason you read the book is because you know there's information in that book, if the book is anything like the movie, if you're lucky enough for it to be semi... The movie to be semi-faithful to the book, you know that the what you're going to read is going to be, you know, infinitely more information and insight into whatever it is, the story that you like, that you'd seen in the movie. Which is why, like Twilight, when that movie came out and skyrocketed, everybody ran out and bought the book, because they know they're going to get more information. They're going to be able to digest more of the story.
And their imagination is much more... much better than what
what you see, because that's an interpretive movie interpretation of a book is one person's
vision,
you know, imagination being brought to life, and that person was tenacious enough or lucky enough to have the resources and the money to be able to bring his or her vision of that material. But when you go read a book yourself, you can interpret the story any way you want. If you're not like me, if I see a movie, then I can't read a book, because all I see is
the character.
All I see is Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan.
Well, a good example of that is, and as Tom will jump on this right away. But a good example of, like, back in the day when people really didn't read a lot of books, like your normal Joe, and they went out to see a movie like The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
Like, whoa, look at, you know, and meanwhile, as Tom pointed out, you know, the books
book
are
dark,
you know,
dark so, journey.
Yeah. So, and it turns out to be a wonderful musical that people really, really didn't know what it was really
if
about.
They only knew.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of crazy stuff. Yeah. I mean, the funny contrast is that I Am Legend, the Richard Matheson book, clearly describes him as a Scotch-Irish, you know, middle-aged man, and then Will Smith's
right on the money,
you know, and you know, like
they knew it.
Wait, Will Smith's on the cover.
Yeah, it's like
I'm reading the wrong story.
Will Smith's like, this role is made for me.
Well, you didn't hear Will Smith said, "Aye, we dog." Come here.
You know, but that would have been funny.
Yes,
I would have gone to see that many
times.
That
would have been me writing that thing.
So let's take J.K. Rowling, because you know she was rags to riches story.
Who's that? I don't know who that is. What are you talking about?
The Harry Potter series,
right?
So you're saying that it is impossible for her to go back and say, "I'm just going to rewrite the whole thing."
She could do it all she wants.
So she can do it because she's
you can't
creator.
Though.
Yeah, because that's not rewriting. That's revision.
Right. Yeah. You as Mark Torres can't decide I'm going to write Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. I'm going to start from scratch and write this story the way it should have been
yeah,
written.
Yeah, this is how it should be.
You can't do that.
I was in this band with this guy who wrote all our songs, and the songs were great. And all of a sudden, he had an idea for one of the best songs that he was going to rewrite it. And he made whole new words for
the original song.
And for the original song. So he could do that. I couldn't have came over and
you
did
can't.
That.
That's plagiarism.
Yes, there you go.
Well, if J.K. Rowling said, I need a ghostwriter. Or maybe she never actually wrote this. That's what I'm trying to get at. You know
how hard it is to get a ghost?
It goes to write down stuff. Yes. Oh,
there's a movie called Ghost Rider with Ewan McGregor. It's a very good movie.
Or we could get our studio.
There used to be
ghost
a TV series, series called Ghost Rider. PBS teaching kids how to write.
Right,
and the Ghost Rider really was a ghost.
Boy, we need that.
He couldn't communicate at all. He couldn't read. He couldn't
he's
speak.
Just write things?
Yeah, he only was able to write stuff. That's the only way he can communicate with the other.
But he always read it backwards.
Look at it in the mirror.
You needed the mirror.
What is your question, though? What are you asking?
Well, because we were saying how sacred the writer and the cornerstone, the seed of the book is.
Well, yeah.
And yet, you know, like
so far,
I've mentioned
we're losing
how,
it.
Well, it's sad, but how other forms of media all have many other writers. So if you can take Chris Carter, who can say, "I'm just going to redo X-Files," and it'd be perfectly okay for him to do. Mm-hmm. Or if he got somebody else to do it, and or like V, where Kenneth Johnson wasn't involved, and they just, you know,
they do that.
He didn't own the rights to the story.
So
he sold the rights.
But
in reality, when a great movie from a great book comes out, everybody jumps on the bandwagon and makes something sort of similar. So in reality, what you remember when Star Wars came out, and then all of a sudden you had all these these pictures about space and fighting battles, and it was the same thing. They just jumped on the bandwagon and changed a couple of words here and there.
So
in reality, that's what people do. Can you remake a book? No. The answer for you people playing at home is no.
What about novelizations or adaptations of movies that are books now? How does that fall into play?
What do you? I don't understand what you mean.
They're going to make a Transformers movie, part three.
Unfortunately.
And they get a professional writer.
They write it while they're making the movie.
I would write an addendum book about how somebody who might be a co-host on a radio show went out and murdered everybody involved in the making of the third movie. That'd be my book.
But don't
we actually have nothing to do with the Transformers.
They write the book while they're doing the movie?
Yes.
That's why there's often sometimes scenes that don't actually appear in the movie,
right.
But which were in the original shooting script.
Yeah. They usually farm out the script to a ghostwriter.
Usually, Alan Dean Foster was notorious for doing a lot of those.
He's like, see, that's not what I said. So what does that fall into play? Is it an adaptation?
It's an adaptation of the script.
Yeah, exactly. It all starts with that original written word. Only this time, it's a screenplay as opposed to a novel per se.
And then it's a more embellished version of the screenplay.
I think anybody could do this. We could do this in this room. Somebody writes a creative sentence, and then we all go with it, and little by little, we'll create a creative paragraph.
And it'll be
completely
different by the time we get to the end of it.
Exactly. Right, right.
Well, that's called a round robin.
Actually, I was thinking about how a couple of years ago, they got a Stan Lee to go over to DC Comics and rewrite all the major characters. And it was praised, you know, what if Stan Lee just made DC Comics? And then he kind of just changed everything as much as he wanted to.
Right.
So isn't that a smack in the face against the people, the creators of the source material to begin with? Or is it just some guy making up stuff?
No, because they don't own what they write if they're working for comic books, if they're working for companies like Marvel. Whoever wrote for Marvel didn't own what he wrote.
So
whoever works for Disney didn't own what... So anybody in the Disney Corporation could say, rewrite that. Take that idea, rewrite that. You know, because it's not theirs.
Yeah,
it's not theirs. So, but if you go and rewrite something that Disney wrote, that's not a good thing.
So it's more of a legal thing, is what I'm trying to get at, as opposed to.
It's not legal. It's all right. Like I said, it's intellectual property. If you own something,
right?
Okay, it's not necessarily legal. If there's ownership of a thing, then it can't be touched, except without consent of the person who owns it. If it becomes public domain, like a lot of stories, like Frankenstein is public domain. A lot of stories become public domain after the author has been dead for a certain number of years, and his or her estate,
I think it's 70 years.
Yeah, but you know, and his or her estate is no longer maintaining the property. Then it becomes public domain. In which case, anything is you're entitled to do anything you want with it. Now there have been a billion movies of Frankenstein. There will never be the definitive Frankenstein movie. Because it was already a book. No one's going to, unless you interpret that book word for word and shoot scene for scene of the book, you're never going to make the definitive Frankenstein movie. The adaptations or the interpretations of all of these books are never going to be finished. I mean, we haven't seen, like 20 years from now, they'll make seven new Harry Potter films. You know, someone else is good. You know, 50 years from now is going to make the Lord of the Rings again. It's never gonna be the end. You know, and we'll compare them all and we'll say, oh, you know, Peter Jackson's was much better than, you know, Joe Blow's. You know, I don't like, you know, whatever.
You're not gonna like his version, are you?
You know, I don't care how much
the guy's name is Joe Blow. How good can his stuff be?
How many Martian laborers he had to work on his his moon base interpretation of the Two Towers? It's just not gonna be as good as Peter Jackson. It's not. It's just we're never gonna. But Tolkien's book never going to be touched. You're never going to be, because it's the source material. Whatever we have that's the source, where the creativity comes from, cannot be altered. You know? You can only interpret it. And that's the thing. So far, our society is based on interpreting. Our entertainment in this society is based on the interpretation of literature. So, with literature as the foundation of anything that we watch or listen to, you know, music or television or movies, we can't, for some reason, fathom altering the interpretation. You know, the source material. And like you said, there are now laws in place that stop people from being able to do that. But I really don't think if you could rewrite something, I really don't think people would tackle it. I mean, look what happened to George Lucas when he tried to make more Star Wars movies. He invented it. And they tried to crucify him for it, you know?
Yeah, and could you imagine that, like, somebody reading the book and saying, hey, this is a really nice book you wrote, but it's this book.
Yeah, exactly. It's like building a mountain. We got those, you know? Why would you try to build a mountain? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Look what I did. This is my life's work.
I built this mountain.
That's one over there.
It looks just like that mountain. Yeah, why did we need two? Now you blocked out the sun in that valley. We're going to lose all those crops.
Now we have to climb something.
Yeah. Way to go, Jack. Yeah. You moron.
Way to go, Joe.
And you put it right in the middle of the freeway, and I can't get to work
exactly.
Now.
Nice job. Why would you build a mountain? We have those. You know, why would you rewrite Lord of the Rings? We already have that. You know, there's no way you could make money off of that. That's another reason no one's going to do it. I can't make a dime off of it because if I took the time to write 1,000 pages of the reinterpretation of Lord of the Rings and tried to put it out, I would get sued. They'd get money from me ultimately. I wouldn't get a dime for the book. If I put together as much money as I could, bought some rights, and made a movie, then I can now profit off of Lord of the Rings just as they would profit. Everybody profits and everybody moves on.
But isn't what we've been talking about for many years is how unoriginal Hollywood is? So isn't going back to the basics the
Yeah, but they don't remake the books. What they do is they do different versions. They're not original because now they're just remaking movies that were done 5 years ago.
Yeah. That's the problem is there's only like five or six.
Seven. It was seven original stories.
I don't even think there's that many. I know that that's what they say, but if you study all the versions of the story, right. Some of those versions are variations on one of the other seven, you know? So there are only seven stories in the first place. What happens is you have a consumer society, right? You have to give these people something that they consume in order for you to make money for the wheel to keep turning, right? So of course you can write a movie from scratch, but the problem with that is that you have to generate interest in that movie. You have to spend money to generate interest in your characters and whatever the premise of your story was, and if you're not lucky for it to be a Pixar movie, which is flashy and already has, like, you know, a lot. I mean, those movies are like candy. So you're always going to be able to sell candy. You'll be able to sell candy before you can sell celery, you know. No, you know, an idiot can sell a candy bar. So you got that. You don't have money for a science fiction movie, which might attract attention, you know. So you have money for maybe a drama or a thriller or something like that. If you're a studio head and you're going to have to dole out money, you're going to take the chance on the kid who just walked in the door with a script, who, even if the script is good, nobody knows his name. You're not going to be able to attract any high-class talent to the project, new high-class directors and actors or whatever, and a decent soundtrack. Or are you going to go, okay, yeah, but Twilight's very famous, and that's...
Make Vampire Diaries?
Yeah, let's just make this into a movie. Everybody knows it, everybody loves it, you know?
And that's what happens, beating the dead horse.
Exactly.
You know.
So that's why we still have these people who sit down and write a book, you know, and if they're lucky enough, their book becomes a sensation, and the movie will have to follow because they're starving. And everybody's starving, and, you know, it's a consumer-based society. So, you know, the guy who just walks in off the street, though he may be smarter than everybody in the room, is not going to generate anybody any money. So he has to wait. Yeah. He has to sell out and become derivative and he'll mediocre, and then he'll sell a whole bunch of scripts after that.
So we got 2 minutes left. We're going to do a final thoughts for the first show of the 2011. You have anything for us there, Charles?
Yeah, I'm going to write a book.
And then you're going to sign your own book.
And then I'm going to sign it. No, I can't. No, I'll be at Coyle's Tavern tonight and bring all the books you want. I'll be in the corner tasting the beers.
Yeah. Tasting the beers. Yeah. This is some fine
beer. This is good beer. You're going to sign
good
the glass.
Good beer. Next.
Sign the snow. Hassan, do you have
I've written several books. So nobody knows who I am, so nobody cares. Nobody can make any money off of it. So please make a movie out of a book.
It's because you were your own ghostwriter.
That's true.
That's
yes.
It.
I'm so ghostly, I hardly write sometimes.
There you go.
Geez, I really can't say much about the subject except that, you know, I guess it's more of a legal type thing, but I guess because it is a sacred, and the legality helps out the people who the original source material comes from. So
sure.
That's what I'm going to come out with.
Never rewrite a book unless you're absolutely sure you could get away with it.
All right. So, Tom has a final word? Oh, you just 1 minute ago.
Tom's like, get out.
I was just, if I did have a final word, it would simply be that interpreting the written word is something that goes extremely deep into our culture. When you think about it, all our religion and philosophy is based on interpreting the written word of holy and philosophical books, the Bible, the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita, the writings of the Buddha and Confucius and so forth. So it's a very, very, very deep part of what makes us what we are.
Well said. Wow. So that about does it for this week. And I guess if you missed any part of the show, you can always catch us online, www.itcamefromradio.com. We'll have archives up within a week, and we will see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.